Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello, Jocelyn. We're back. I don't know if... you're probably not at that point yet where you get to do the parent tax for Easter. I doubt Olivia got a lot of chocolate that you could, like, steal from her.
Oh, no. I think this is probably the last year, because my parents still do an Easter basket for me, and now Matt.
God.
All right. I got my own Easter basket full of chocolate from my parents, but this is probably my last year, because as you mentioned, next year will be Olivia's time for her Easter basket, so.
Yeah.
We don't do the full Easter egg hunt or anything anymore, but. My mom definitely still makes me an Easter basket with a big chocolate bunny and everything. Yeah, I do not need all of that chocolate, but I ate it.
And that's the thing. It's like I joke about the parent tax, and you know, you got Halloween and Easter. Those are the seasons where it's like, oh, you know, I like this kind of candy. I found it funny because like our kids always get too much candy, and it's almost like we don't want. The candy. We don't want all that candy, but the kids are like, oh yeah, we got a bag full of it. I think they get more at Easter than they do at Halloween because there's like less effort involved. You don't have to go door to door. You just like visit with your grandparents.
And they give you a bucket full.
Exactly. The neighbor visited and brought over three bunnies, one for each of our kids, but they were like, and I said, like, oh, thank you. This is great. They're hollow, right? And he's like, oh, no, I don't. They're solid. And I'm like, they're hollow, right? You bought three full-size Easter bunnies? You know, and they're sitting on the counter. And Ashley's like, I don't even know what to do. Like, do you post it on Facebook and say, first come, first serve? Like,
you're not going to give them to your kids?
Oh, the kids know that they're there, you know? And it's too late at this point to be like, can't give them away because like that's the chocolate they got from the neighbors.
Yeah.
Full size, solid Easter bunny. I don't even know. Like, when are they going to eat that? Like, we're going to carve it for dinner? Like, everybody come around. Yeah,
My mom used to like chop it because we used to get solid Easter bunnies too. And my mom used to like chop it into basically like chocolate bar size.
Right.
And then, you know, like we would just get that instead of a chocolate bar because we used to have, so we were never allowed pop or candy with the exception of candy day, which was Saturday. So 10 a.m. Saturday morning, we got a thing. So either like a pop, like a Coke or a 7-Up or like something with sugar or a candy. And we would like go to the convenience store. We could pick it out. Like it was, but that was like our thing for the week. On candy day. Yeah. So yeah, around Easter, we would get like a portion of our Easter bunny. So that thing lasted like 6 weeks.
Right. Okay. So for like candy events, did your parents control the candy?
100%.
So they took the parent tax. They definitely did.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. My mom can't have chocolate though. She's allergic, but everything else. Yeah.
Okay. So your dad had the chocolate.
Yeah.
She had everything else. I understand.
But yeah, so Saturdays were the greatest because we got cartoons and then candy. It was like, this is the best day of life.
That's awesome. And then you got a day to come down, right? Before you go back to school.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now that makes sense. We got away from controlling the candy because like the kids like to hoard it in their own room, like put it in their room.
Oh, yeah, no, that was never allowed. It went in the dining room closet above where we could reach.
Yeah,
it was away.
I don't know if it's like, it's naive of me as a parent to say we trust our kids not to eat the candy, or if it's more just like, it's less resistance this way. Like, okay, you can control the candy, but the second we find that you're like eating it at 2 a.m. because you just woke up and you were hungry, we have to take it out of your rooms. It's been fine. They'll ask for it. But like so far it hasn't backfired yet. But like Caden has candy from like Halloween still in his room. I was like, that stuff can't be good anymore, right? Right?
I don't know. How long does that stuff last? I don't even know.
I don't know. Either way, lots of candy. If anyone has any thoughts on what we should do with these full-size candy bars, if we should like morsel them out until like July. Just let us know. I don't know. Let me know. We'll figure it out together.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone has helpful advice.
Yeah. They'll probably just say eat it, you know.
Yeah.
Cut them all in half and be like, oh, they're the new half-size bunnies. Maybe that's what we'll do. Mm.
There you go. There you go.
We'll figure it out. Jocelyn, I'm excited to hear about this game that you played and or finished because the new Princess Peach game came out. And I know you were rocking the Switch over these last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I was. And so, I mean, you guys know, I was really excited about the Princess Peach Showtime game because, like, I thought it looked really cool. I liked the concept. And the thing that I was most worried about was that you were basically going to get pigeonholed in what you could do because, like, when you play a Mario game and Mario gets like, I mean, he's had hats, he's had like had different power-ups and all kinds of stuff, but like you can still take like your firepower or, you know, your floaty raccoon tail or whatever, and you can use it in whatever level you want, right? So I was really hoping that that was the style that the Princess Peach game was going to go for, because what I was really worried about is that you'd be really pigeonholed and you'd have like very specific levels with very specific powers. And unfortunately, that's 100% the way it played out. So I've now completed the main campaign, and it was pretty short. Overall, there were 3 levels per power. There were 10 powers altogether, and then there were 5 boss fights. So on any given floor of the theater, the premise basically is like Princess Peach sees an ad for this like theater show. She wants to go. She and all the little toad people go to the theater. And then there's this evil entity power thing that they never really explain. Spoiler alert. I was expecting some big reveal the whole time. There was no real big reveal. She was just evil.
Oh, okay.
But she basically takes over the theater and tries to turn all of the plays into tragedies. And so the game is you as Peach taking over as the lead in each play and then trying to defeat the evildoers and tell a heroic story, basically. And you have to save all of the like the real stars of the play. And you do that by taking on their personas. So there's the sword fighter. There's the ninja, which is like stealthy. There's the superhero, the figure skater, the baker, the mermaid, I said superhero already. There's 4 of them. I can't remember now.
Is there like a cowgirl one?
There's it right at the cowgirl one.
I'm just trying to, cause like, that was my question for you is like whether what we saw in the trailers were the sort of themes that we got, like if there were any that they kind of held back for the game.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what exactly there was in the trailer, but basically there were 10 different powers or 10 different personas altogether. And you had kind of like an introductory tutorial type level, then kind of like an intermediate level, and then like a master's level, like an expert. But like my biggest, I guess, like pet peeve was kind of that, like, so for instance, I really enjoyed the figure skating level and I really enjoyed the baking levels. I thought they were really cool. They like, you definitely couldn't have like become the sword fighter and done the bakery level. Like it wouldn't have made any sense. So like, I understand why they ended up making like specific levels for specific powers, but like I could play a Princess Peach becomes a figure skater game. I could play a Princess Peach makes cupcakes game because like I found them to be really, really fun. But then like it was never really all that challenging because there was only 3 levels as each thing. So like the ones that I really, really enjoyed, there weren't nearly enough levels of. And then there were other ones that I found like I really didn't enjoy. And I was basically, oh, the spy one, the detective. Oh, I like the I would play a Detective Peach game for sure too. Yeah, like they just like the ones I really, really liked, there wasn't enough of. And then there was a whole bunch that I didn't really have time for. So there were like I didn't really enjoy. So like 3 or 4 of them. So like 9 to 12 levels were awesome and I really enjoyed them. But then the other like 15 to 18 levels, I was kind of like, ugh, I really just want to blow through this. And for each level, you have the opportunity to, it's very much like the stars hidden in Mario levels and stuff. Like there were 10 different sparkles you could find in the first two levels and then 5 in the expert level, because the expert levels were very, very short. But anyways, you could find these and then you use those like sparkle coins to unlock the boss fights. So at the end, there was 4 levels on every floor and then 1 boss fight. And I think the first boss fight, you had to have like 5 of them. And then the next boss fight was like 10 and then 15, 20, 25. But all said and done, you had the possibility of earning like 250 of them and you only ever had to spend like 60. So the like there was no incentive to go back and try to find all of the stars in the level, you know, like you just kind of like, I blew through them the first time. Like sometimes I would get like 6 or 7. Sometimes I'd get 10. Sometimes I'd get 2, but it never mattered. Like I never had to go. I never hit a spot where I was like, oh, I should probably go back to that level where I only got 2 stars out of 10 and try to get more because now I've hit a block. So I was like a little bit frustrated by that. Like I thought it was just overall a little bit too easy. And then afterwards, after you're finished the campaign, they do give you the option. There's like some challenge modes for the boss fights where it's like complete the boss fight without taking any damage, and then you'll get a bonus star. And the reason is that afterwards, after the campaign, you can like decorate the theater. But again, it's not personalized in any way. It's like you can spend those star, that sparkle star stuff that you find in the levels on like decorations for the pillars and like statues in the middle of the theater floor and stuff. But it's like you buy the first floor statue, you buy the second floor statue, and it's like this is what it is. Not like you can choose between like a statue of Peach and a statue of your sidekick and a statue of a star. I don't know. Like there's no choice whatsoever. It's just like, do you want to buy this thing or not? And then it's like, it's not a multiplayer game. So you're like literally just buying this stuff for no reason. Like there really isn't that much more gameplay to be had after, like outside of this challenge mode. And even then the challenge mode is like, I did the challenge mode for the first boss just to see what it was like. And it was extremely easy to complete all 3 of the challenges that they give you. It was like, don't take damage, destroy all of her summons. And I can't remember what the 3rd thing was. But it was just very, 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 very simple. So, I mean, overall, I think this was probably, I would say very, it reminded me a whole lot of like a Luigi's Mansion, or like, I think when we were talking earlier, you said Kirby. I've never played Kirby, but like it was on that kind of scale, right? Like much less than a full Mario game, but still like mostly enjoyable. Like even the ones that I really didn't enjoy weren't like terrible. Like I still had a decent amount of fun, but some of them were really, really fun, and then I was sad when I couldn't do them anymore.
Yeah, so it sounds, it's very interesting because like it sounds similar to, I know I compared it to Kirby, but it sounds similar to this developer's past game, the developer's Goodfield. They made Yoshi's Crafted World.
Oh, okay. I played that one, but I don't remember it all that well.
Yeah. Like, this feels like I know a lot of people say, like, oh, Nintendo games, they definitely, you know, aim at a younger audience, but they do have specific games that they make where they are very clearly crafting an experience for a younger audience, and Yoshi's Crafted World very much had that feel, and it was a great game to play with the kids. The kids loved it. They were able to play. There was always something to, like, look at and see and watch out for. And this game, Princess Peach Showtime, also kind of feels like that experience of like, this is
100%.
Yeah, like aimed at a younger audience, which is fine. And then you have other Nintendo games like, and I think Luigi's Mansion, you could probably throw into that category as well. Like it's, there aren't these barriers that are put in place to like, oh, I got to earn like I have to actually go and earn these things to unlock these further levels, or even unlock stuff that's gated in a way that's like, okay, this is the optional super difficult stuff. Like Super Mario Wonder had a whole, like most Mario games will have like a whole section that is like, this is like the really difficult levels that is totally optional, but if you want to do it because you're a big fan of Mario and you want a challenge, like there's that challenging level. And I think that was the question I had for you as well, was like, okay, like there is a level of Nintendo games where it is aimed at a younger or all ages audience, but definitely has that like section that's like, okay, this is for the folks that want to like test their skills or sort of go through some more difficult challenges. I don't believe like Yoshi's Crafted World or Luigi's Mansion had that. It was more of like a linear experience, and everything you did was kind of on the same difficulty scale. So like Princess Peach doesn't have that like extra layer of like, now you've unlocked, you know, the Super Showtime stuff, like the very difficult.
Yeah.
Plays.
Like, so yeah, that stuff was just the boss fights. It was like, you could go back and do, like the challenges to earn those, like I said, the three bonus stars per boss fight, but like, it wasn't compelling enough for me to feel like I had to do it. And the boss fights were, like you just played as Peach. You didn't have any of your special powers. You couldn't say like, I want to play this boss as the sword fighter or the cowgirl. Like it was just, you are Peach, you have your sparkle power, and that's it. It wasn't more of the like costumed content. It was just Peach herself doing these boss fights, which was fine. But yeah, it wasn't anything like special or unique necessarily. So I don't know. It was okay. I'm trying to think, like, I mean, they did have the, like you say, it was definitely geared towards a more, I guess, casual audience. Cause like I say, I never hit a point where I didn't have enough stars to go through a door to get to a boss. It really felt like as long as you finished the four levels, then you would have enough. Cause you always got a star for finishing a level. And like most of the stars, I felt like I was just running into them. Like you would have to actively try to avoid them. Some of them were hidden. Like there were times where like you had to perform the thing. So like one of the things that you did as Bakery Peach was they would show you a picture of a decorated cake. And then you had to, like using the joysticks, you had to draw the icing on in the same pattern. And then push a button to say like, yes, I'm done. And then it would do like, I'm pretty sure they've done these and sort of things in Mario games before. You had to like push a button and say like, okay, I'm done. And then it would like compare the two and then be like, yeah, you did it, or no, you didn't, or you weren't fast enough or whatever. And so if you performed, like if you got all of your cakes like perfectly correct, then you would get a star for that. So like you could still pass and complete the level for getting like 3 out of 5 cakes. But to get the star, you had to do all of them perfectly. There were quite a few stars in the game that were based on stuff like that. But then, like, they had two mechanics that made it very much, like, I guess, a lot easier, a lot less difficult, maybe, like you say, geared to a younger audience. Because you can talk to a character in the lobby on the first floor, so, like, right as soon as you get into the game. And they let you carry, I can't remember what it's called. It's like everything is named is sparkles, sparkles, sparkle-a, sparkle this, sparkle that, whatever. So it was probably the magic sparkle or some shit. But you can hold this thing and it gives you 3 bonus hearts. So instead of having 5 hearts, Peach has 8 hearts. So you have 8 chances to screw up instead of just 5. So like that just in general made it easier. But also, if you lose all of your hearts twice, so like you lose all your hearts, you pay 10 coins and you like restart at your last checkpoint. But if you then die again, it gives you the option to just spend all of the coins that you've earned in that level and auto-complete it. Like you don't even see it play out. It just says like, would you like to pay 45 coins or whatever and auto complete this this level. And you can just say yes, and then it spits you back out into the lobby, and it's like, da-da-da-da, you completed the play. So, and it's and it's just, like, it's however many coins you have managed to find in that level. It doesn't have, like, it's not like you have to have, like, 50 or 40 or whatever. Like, there's no set price. It's just, like, whatever coins you've collected so far in this, and in this level, not total, just in this level. Like, do you want to spend them to auto complete? So I did that once on, I think it was a spy level. And I can't even 100% remember why, only that I really didn't like the spy, movement mechanic. The spy levels were a little bit more, like platformy, but like, as with kind of any of them, I felt like I was just getting the hang of the mechanic, and then there were no more levels to play. But the spy one had like three different types of hooks that you would like grapple to. And so one hook was like she would grapple to it and then like stick to the hook. One was like a rotatey one. So she'd grapple to it and it would like spit her out like with momentum in the same direction. And then the other one was like a grapple and swing. So like I found that it was really touchy and didn't really play all that well. So I think I ended up just like to see what would happen. I did the buy my way through the level thing. And yeah, it just totally is like, okay, you've completed the level, go back into the lobby, and it's like, you did the thing. I'm like, I didn't really though.
It's pretty pay to win, Jocelyn.
Yeah. And so the reason that you might care about your coins and you might not want to do that is like this feature I'm about to tell you about, I am so torn because on the one hand, I really liked it, but I kind of hated myself for liking it because I don't remember any other game where the main character, like a Mario or a Luigi or a Yoshi, had cosmetics. So you could change that. You could go to a store in the main lobby and spend the coins that you found in the levels to buy Peach new dresses. And I'm like, I hate that the game with the like main character being a girl is the game where they institute cosmetics, but also I'm loving shopping and I hate myself for that. Like, it's so like stereotypical and just like the, but I liked it. I'm so torn, Ryan.
Yeah, I'm looking, I found this website, I think it's the Mario Wiki site, and it lists like everything in, mm-hmm. in the game, and it also includes like all the outfits and stuff. And yeah, I don't know if other Mario games have had
cosmetics.
I feel like maybe like if I had to guess, like maybe Odyssey had something, but then again, like I think you're right. Like I don't think you were changing Mario's outfit. I mean, I'll say this though, like I kind of wish all Mario and Nintendo games had like cosmetic outfits that you could buy in game.
That's what I mean. Like, yeah. I like the feature, but I kind of hate that I like the feature.
Yeah, but some of these dresses are really cool. Like, I'm just kind of looking.
Yeah,
at
like
all
you basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a dress that you got for like each different character had its own dress, and then I think it was once you had completed the third level, you unlocked like the more intricate, the more exaggerated version of the dress. So like the first version, say, of the figure skater might have like some snowflakes around the bottom or something, and then the next version would have like snowflakes all over the dress. Like it was more. Mm-hmm. And then you got a dress. I think you unlocked a dress for each boss that you defeated as well. Which the boss dresses were the only ones who were like not pink. The other ones were all like different colors of pink on pink, but the boss dresses were like very much inspired by the boss that you just defeated. And the fact that I'm talking about pink fucking dresses right now makes me so angry. But at the same time, like you said, I did like that they added like a cosmetic layer. Like it was kind of cool that I got to like run around in these like specific Peach dresses. But then the only time that you see them are when you're running around like in the lobby, which really isn't that big of a thing. You basically use the lobby to go from like level to level. And so you don't really see it all that much. Like you don't spend too much time as Peach. You spend time as Peach in her various different costumes. So like, again, it was like, it was something they put in the game, but then I wasn't spending that much time in an area where I would see it. It wasn't the same as say like Link in Breath of the Wild, where like you're going to spend 150 hours in this game and you see Link all the time and he's always in his like whatever outfit he's wearing for whatever purpose. Like it wasn't like that at all. It was like the lobby is the in-between place. It's like the overworld, right? So as soon as you go into a level, you take on the costume and the persona of that level. So it was kind of like, again, very similar to the like, oh, help us decorate the theater, you know, after the main campaign is done, where it's like, but why? Like, there's really no reason to, other than to have like a sink for your currency. So yeah, like, again, I kind of enjoyed it. It was kind of cool. Like I did, the one character that you do see all the time is your little sidekick, your little Sparkle sidekick. And she has a ribbon that's like tied around her, like a bow tie and a dress. And, you could change the color. Like you got basically dresses for Peach and ribbons for her. And you had to go buy all the different colors and, you know, so you could dress her up and she followed you around all the time. So her cosmetics kind of made sense, but they were much more simplistic than Peach's. But still, like, I love hate it.
Yeah, no, I can understand. And I mean, I know that I mean, it's like, and I mean, it's a show, like it's Princess Peach Showtime. It's all about different themes and the fact that you can earn sort of special outfits based on those themes. But it, as you said, it sounds like even if you can unlock all this stuff, like you're not seeing it a lot. Cause as yeah, like obviously all the levels are themed around like a specific costume change. So
yeah. And you didn't get to alter those costumes at all. Yeah. So, oh, okay. I mean, like, yeah, it's kind of like, I wish they had implemented it in any other game first. Right. Like,
sure.
I know that like there are other games where your character changes their appearance, but that's usually directly tied to some sort of power, right? Like it's better armor. It has a specific purpose. It lets you do a thing. But this wasn't that. This was strictly like, girls like shopping, so we put shopping in the girl game, you know?
Yeah.
And I loved it, but I hate that.
Yeah. But then all the outfits, like, for the specific themes, like, the actual outfit changes are really, like, detailed. Like, she's not...
Yes. Yeah.
She's not in her traditional dress. She is straight up, you know...
They're completely different. Yeah.
Yeah. And they all look so, like, unique and some are styled, like, similar to, you know, other Nintendo products. Like, like they feel like they're in the Mario universe, right?
Yes. But, yeah. No, they did a really, really great job with all of her different personas. Like, the aesthetics are very, very good. I just, like I said, I would play a Detective Peach game. I would play a figure skating Peach game. Like, the figure skating I found so relaxing. It's basically like she's just skating around and then there are like different icons that show up on the ice and you have to go to the icon and do the thing. So like one is a jump and one is a twirl. Like it's the whole game is two buttons. There's a jump button and there's a do the thing button. And so it was simplistic, but it was like it looked really pretty. She was like, every time she would spin, there was like sparkles and snowflakes everywhere. Like it just, I found the figure skating levels to be so relaxing. And the baking was similar, actually. Like there were like a lot of the other levels, like I say, there were platforming elements. There were, you know, like the cowboy. The one thing I will say, the cowboy level did it for sure. I think there was two or three other personas that did this as well, but every once in a while the game took over your movement, but there wasn't a real big like reason for it or like notification. It was just all of a sudden you just kind of lost control of your character, but then you were still expected to like press your power button, but it wasn't really communicated very well. And those portions I really didn't like. I would have liked to continue to control my character movement, but like you say, geared towards the younger audience, meant to be simplistic, meant to be easy. But yeah, I think overall, like it was good. It's too bad that Nintendo games don't go on sale very often, if at all, because I really feel like, so this was an $80 game, and I feel like it was probably worth more like $50-$60. Like I say, it took me probably, I want to say like 10 hours to complete, and there were, you know, 30 levels and 5 boss fights. It wasn't that that beefy of a game. I don't think it would, like, I don't think it was necessarily worth kind of like full price Nintendo pricing.
Yeah, and I think you can get it down to maybe not 60, but you can get it lower by getting the vouchers.
Right, which is, that is what I did. I did the vouchers, yeah. So, I mean, I wasn't 100% sure what I was going to spend my second voucher on, but I figured, you know, it was definitely worth doing, because I'm sure there's going to be something before we switch over to Switch 2.
Yeah, I think you have 12 months to redeem it. And
yeah,
because I was looking at what was coming up, and we don't know anything past June, but the new Paper Mario, not new, but the...
Oh, that's what it was, the Thousand Year Door. That's the one, because I think that's another $80 title.
Yes.
So yeah, I was thinking I would get the Thousand Year Door. I'm like, I knew there was something coming, and it's that remake, because I just, oh man, I love the Thousand Year Door.
Yeah, it's a gap in my Nintendo sort of, I don't know, games that I've played. Like, I've never played it, so I don't know why we never picked it up. I mean, I know why we never picked it up. I was pretty sour when they had the Super Mario RPG, and they dropped that sort of look, feel, and story, essentially, in favor of Paper Mario. And I remember playing Paper Mario on the N64, and I think we rented it, and we got, like, quite far, and then never picked it back up. And then I think when... It was one of those things, like, looking back, I wish we had picked it up on GameCube, because it was the last traditional Paper Mario. So again, it was like, I didn't appreciate it at the time. And then by the time we get to the point where, like, I really like Nintendo Mario RPGs with, like, actual RPG systems, and doesn't have some gimmick attached to it, and has a decent story. And that was the last one, because after that we got stickers and...
Yeah.
Origami, and you know, I like the Origami King, but you know, it's not a traditional. I think they kind of shifted over to Mario and Luigi sort of taking over the RPG, but even that series kind of went and removed a lot of that RPG stuff, and they don't make them anymore. But anyways, yeah, I am looking forward to that remake, and as you said, it is full price. I think it's out in May.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so not a long wait. So you'll be able to redeem it before you know it.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, I do think that this is a smaller title that maybe you shouldn't pay full price for. So whether you do the voucher system or wait for maybe sale, I think that's the way to go, because it's a pretty small game overall.
Yeah.
But it was fun, though. Like I say, there were some parts that were really fun. I think if you have kids, this is definitely a play it with your kids game.
Yeah. No, I think it's interesting, because Izzy just celebrated her 4th birthday, and she's a huge fan of Princess Peach. And I actually, I went to the Nintendo online store, and I ordered a Princess Peach stuffy, as well as an Isabelle stuffy from Animal Crossing. So she loves the Princess Peach stuffy, but then I say, like, this is Isabelle. This is like, no, I'm Isabelle. And I was like, well, okay, but like the character.
You can both be.
You can both be Isabelle. And I always like to say, it's like, you were named after this character. And Ashley's like, no, that's not how it works. Just like, you can pick any name, and there is a video game character, some obscure, some, you know, well-known from a hit franchise like Animal Crossing, but... she would love this game, and I know that we were pretty close to picking it up for her birthday, but I think, as you said, being a full price title, it was a hard one to sort of look at as like, is he actually going to play it being four, or is he just going to watch it? And but it's definitely on our radar, and I think the vouchers might be the best approach. Like, I think Nintendo is, I don't see them announcing anything for the second half of this year that's gonna like be, I really don't know what they would announce that would be in, like, I don't know, I don't want to say interesting, but like, I can't see them releasing anything crazy this fall with the Switch 2. Like, I think we're gonna get more remakes, maybe some ports. Like, they might finally do that Wind Waker port that people keep teasing. I don't know, but I don't envision there being anything crazy in the second half as we wait for the Switch 2.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of twos, you played a two this week.
I did. Yeah, I played a lot of Helldivers 2. Actually, most of it was played at your place because I was at your place for a guy's weekend. There were eight dudes just hanging out playing video games and board games and all kinds of stuff. Hopefully the smell got out of that PlayStation room where they just
God. Oh, I can't even remember why. I think I was like, it was after, because so we didn't have a show last week because Matt was away, and so I was on 24/7 Olivia duty, and so I think it was when he came back, so this was like 5 days after all you guys had left. And so he came back and I was like, oh my God, can I just like pass her off? I need to go have a nap. He's like, absolutely, go downstairs. You know, like, that's where the blackout curtains are. And she walked into that room and I was like, oh my God, it stinks of boy down here.
Yeah, yeah. It so was like,
5 days later, it was still rank.
It was something. I mean, like, it had been a while since we had like a gathering of that type. Cause I think the last time was actually before you were married, was for Matt's bachelor party. And I was kind of doing the math and it's like, holy crap, it has been a while, you know? And, so it was due up for sure. And I was very happy that Matt was able to host, because you guys have a really great space for it. And, when I got there, they had sort of set up this spare room with like just for the PlayStation. So we had four PlayStation 5s on the go. I brought mine. Some other folks brought theirs. And we played a bunch of Helldivers 2. And yeah, like, you know, there was a lot of unhealthy food, but for the most part, like, I think everyone did really well. Like, I came back, I'm jumping around here, but we'll come back to Helldivers 2. But from the food aspect, like, Ashley's like, well, what do you want to bring? So, I don't know, like, these type of events, like chips and maybe some treats. And I actually came back with most of it because, like, we were having actual meals as opposed to just eating chips and junk.
You're like adults now.
I know. I was really happy about that. I mean, like, we ended up having to bring the treats to other things just so they weren't at the house, because like, what are you going to do with like a giant bag of gummies? Like, you're not going to eat all of them in one go. Yeah, that too. Yeah, like, you can't just eat all that stuff. Like, it's got to go. It's got to go. It cannot be in the house. Yeah, we had a great time playing Helldivers 2, and it was really something special, because like, the whole weekend, because it's a four player sort of co-op game, the whole weekend, all you heard was the soundtrack to Helldivers 2, no matter what you were doing, because it was constantly being played. It was one of those games that was like, we had other ideas of like what we could do. And I think the main reason we did other stuff was because it was a four-player game and there were eight of us. So we would often like swap out, like four of us would play the game, four of us would go do board games or whatever, but like, there was no other video games being played. We had all these grand ideas. Like, I even said to Matt, it's like, oh, at some point I want to boot up the Xbox and see what this like Suicide Squad is all about, because you had picked it up. Never happened, because again, like, our brains were just like, if we are sitting down to play a video game, it is Helldivers 2, because that is where our heads are at. So played a lot of it. It is a four-player co-op live service game. A lot of folks have heard of it because like, it came out in February, sort of launched into this like unknown status of whether it was going to be good or not. And like, it just, it's one of those games that just hit and it ran, you know, it was having a lot of issues at launch due to server congestion and like not a, they just weren't prepared for how popular it was at launch. Mm-hmm. And because it is a live service game, it very much relies on having the ability to have server space. And the game sort of has this like overarching, I don't want to say narrative, but like these systems where it's not just you booting. It's not like Left 4 Dead where it's like, okay, get three of your friends together, play, boot into a match, see how many points you can get, have a blast, you're good to go. This has like another meta layer to it where you are queuing into missions with your friends, but you're also liberating planets for democracy. You're taking out these, there's a whole thing about like, you know, like we're spreading democracy and mm-hmm. as we're playing, I'm asking,
aren't
like,
the humans the baddies basically?
Yes. Yeah. I think the idea, so the idea is like, we are like, I'm assuming what's actually happening is we are wiping the bugs and robots off these planets so that we can set up colonies and that's how we're spreading democracy. At one point when I was playing, I stopped and I'm like, wait a minute, why are we killing these bugs? Shouldn't we be like teaching them how to vote in some sort of election?
You know, isn't like that how bugs? You spread democracy?
Yeah. And then I'm like, no, Ryan, that's not funny, you know, and this is a humorous game, teaching bugs how to vote and, you know, campaign and, you know, do all that fun stuff isn't part of the fun. So, and like the bugs being the bad guys, that's where they get the part of the Starship Troopers sort of feel, with fighting these bugs. And you do feel it like as you're fighting these bugs, it's like, okay, this very much feels like Starship Troopers, but it's also the humor aspect to it as well. Like the very democracy, rah, rah, spread, you know, liberty and freedom and all that. And you see it with the humor and whatnot, throughout the game and all the dialogue and stuff. It's like, every inch of this game is sort of coded in this humor that they've built up, and like, you know, everything from, you know, the NPCs that are sort of showing up in your ship to the point of like you being able to select the name of your ship by choosing the first and second part of your ship name. You can kind of customize what it is. Mine is the superior founder of First Earth or whatever. And there's other ones like, you know, Spear of Justice or like, you know, Fist of Liberty.
Right. All okay. These different so you ones. Choose like spear or fist or what, and then of, and then other word.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
And everybody has a ship. So like when you're playing the game, you name your ship. And when you're queuing into missions, like, you don't like go to your friendship. You all like travel to the planet in these giant ships. Like it is the it's the biggest waste of gas you'd ever seen. Like, and the cool part is like, as I was mentioning, there's a meta layer to it. Like, I haven't seen it roll over yet. We really played a bunch of it that one weekend, and how it works is there's like a galaxy map, and you're trying to liberate the, you know, the map and take out all the bugs, and the other faction is the automaton, which is these like robot enemies. Not as fun to play as the bugs. The bugs was definitely the most fun I had playing, but the automatons are all right too, but not as fun as the bugs. And this galaxy map has like this territory, and you're trying to clear, and you can actually see progress as other players. So everybody's playing together in this
right.
one campaign to liberate the universe, the galaxy, or whatever. And it is really neat to see that. Like, you know, down to the percentage is like 4 decimal points. So you can literally see it progressing as matches are completing throughout, you know, the servers the universe, and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is so cool.
What happens then? If you can see the progress, what happens when you like beat everything? Do the servers just shut down? Everyone's like, okay, that's a wrap on Helldivers 2. Good job. Liberated universe.
First of all, freedom. That's what happens.
Okay.
And then democracy, and then liberty, and then a server reset. So I imagine like what happens is they set up these like they have rotating quests that'll pop up that earn you in-game medals that you can use to redeem on the battle passes. And essentially when you know a campaign is completed, it essentially starts over. Like it is a game that is never ending, and it is live service, so they're constantly adding new weapons, and I think they just dropped a patch. Like there's new enemies now. Like they've added like a new automaton baddie that you can fight. So they are constantly updating, but they have these sort of in-game campaigns and quests that you're constantly trying to complete. So the game is, in a sense, never ending. Like I don't know if they have like new planets that populate, or if they just reset it and say, okay, like you've completed this campaign. Now we wipe the progress and we start over and you have to liberate these planets again. I don't know if they do, which approach they take, but each, you know, planet has a different biome. So like there are, you know, desert planets. There are planets that are like lush jungles. There was one planet they were doing that was just constantly spawning fire tornadoes. So there are like environmental hazards that you have to contend with alongside like giant bugs. Yeah, it's just so varied. And the gameplay is a lot of fun too. Like it is a third person shooter. The unique part to it is that you can call down these stratagems. So when you play a multiplayer game like Call of Duty, you know, you have the kill streak to unlock like the super cool stuff.
Oh yeah. 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 Yeah.
You know, you get like the nukes and stuff in Call of Duty. And like, I'm not good at Call of Duty, so I never got any of the cool stuff. I think I maybe sometimes got enough kills to get like the, you call in a scan to show people on the mini map. That's as good as I could get. Whereas other people are like calling down like cool guns and nukes. So in Helldivers 2, like you equip your loadout and you have it on a cooldown. So you can call down these like super, you know, like essentially call in airstrikes whenever you want and call in like turrets and special guns. And they're on a cooldown, like, so depending on the weapon, if it's a very strong sort of stratagem, the cooldown might be 5 minutes. But other ones, like calling in like a strafe from I can't remember what they call it, it's like an airstrike. I think it's the Eagle. Of course, it's the Eagle. It's like an Eagle run. And you can call down up to three of them before they have to recharge. So, and you just do that whenever you want. Like you punch in a code and then you kind of, once you punch in that code successfully, you get like a little beacon or grenade. So you throw the beacon and then it will put a thing on the map saying like, okay, like, you know, Merpan has launched like an orbital strike here and there's friendly fire. So of course, you know, sometimes you accidentally kill your teammates.
Of course.
And because it happens.
It happens.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's bound to happen. What you were trying to take out all the bugs. It's not your fault that Crofton was standing there at the time or Matt was standing there. And definitely had some friendly fire. But and then once you kill your friends, you can revive them. You have like a pool of recruits that you can pull from. I think one of the mats was devastated when he's like, oh, and I just respawn. And I'm like, well, technically your character is dead and now you're a new recruit. And he's like, well, now I need to come up with a whole new backstory. It's like, yeah, these aren't clones. Like these are new recruits every time you die. Like the game doesn't sugarcoat that sort of stuff. It's like, yeah, you died for liberty. Like, all right, get a fresh person in here. Let's go. But my favorite part is the dive. Like, honestly, like any game that gives you the option to like heroically dive just by double tapping a button is amazing. And this is going to sound super silly to everyone at home, but like what I'll do is like, as I'm running around, I'll do the dive. And then if you dive off too high a cliff or too high a ledge, even like it kind of transitions into free fall and then your character ragdolls and then just hilariously like crumples into the ground, like, ugh, you know, and takes fall damage or whatever, but it is just the most hilarious thing. It's such a Ryan thing to be like, you know, jumping off of ledges and going, wee, it's like, ugh, hit my head. And it's like, okay, I took a little damage, but it's all right. We're going to survive. It's the little things, but it is such a fun game. And like, as you're progressing through the missions, you do have like a main mission that you know right off the bat, but you have 40 minutes in a mission. If you were to just beeline and do the main thing, you would maybe take 5-10 minutes, depending on the difficulty setting. But other times, you know, you are encouraged to go off the path, find like sub-objectives, optional stuff. You can find the premium currency in the missions. So like, you don't have to put any additional money into this. You can get all the premium currency you want just by playing the game. You can unlock it in the free battle pass. And I think just even playing that one weekend and a little bit afterwards, I'm like halfway to being able to buy like one of the premium quote unquote battle passes that I can then earn towards with the normal medals that you can get in the game. So it's very much set up in a way that's like, yes, you can buy stuff with real money. You can go to like the best value tab and buy premium currency, but really you're encouraged to just play it, have a great time. You can find the premium currency both earned through the battle pass or through just doing missions. And it is a lot of fun. And you were just constantly encouraged to explore within the mission, you know, finding, they're called samples. And you collect those samples to be able to upgrade your ship. So there's like a whole upgrade path, unlocking new stratagems, like, you know, increasing your powers on your ship so that your stratagems are more effective, unlocking new weapons, new cosmetics. And it is a $50 game. So
is that, that's really, really good value then. But like when you're upgrading all your stuff, does that like increase the difficulty of missions you can go on? Are all the missions like the same sort of difficulty so you just complete them faster? Like what are the missions like? What's that difficulty level? Does it change at all?
So there are 9 difficulty levels. You start with, you know, easy and you kind of work your way up and you unlock them just by completing the previous difficulty. And we, I think, got to about challenging, which is about like the fifth difficulty. And from what I could tell, like the early game missions were very much like, go to this point, upload a thing, come back. And then as you increase the difficulty, the missions become more varied and more complex. So we were doing a fifth difficulty. One of them was basically launch a missile. So you have to go across the map, find the coordinates, upload the coordinates to a different location, travel back to the launch location, input the coordinates, you know, fuel the rocket, blah, 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 a bunch of steps. And then after defending, like defending and launching this missile, you get to watch it launch. And it actually launches to a point on the map and you see the explosion in the horizon. and in this specific moment, we had some folks who had played previously and I was fresh playing and we were playing and other folks were like, oh yeah, you watch the explosion. And as we're watching it, it's like, oh, this is lovely. Just look at this explosion. And then like the blast back came and it's like, it almost killed our whole party. And they were like, oh, that's new. They just added that, I guess. So they are constantly tweaking this game and like, you know, creating new wrinkles for you to experience as a player.
That's good. I was gonna say, like, it's the fact that it's like a $50 game, this is a whole lot for a $50 game, but it kind of makes sense given the kind of response and the size of the player base that they got, because I mean so many people are playing this game.
Yeah,
you said off the start, like they got overwhelmed on launch. So, and it doesn't really seem like the excitement or the interest is really dying down. Like it seems like it's still pretty popular.
Yeah, I think it's doing really well and it is a lot of fun. And there's talk that they're going to add like a third faction. There is, so this is the second one. So the first one came out like 15 years ago or 10 years ago, I don't know, but it had a third faction. So there's hints that this third faction could launch at some point in the next couple months. So there's, there's still lots that they're working towards, and as you said, like they've been working towards adding new stuff and are constantly changing things. So I think this will be one to watch. And if you were on the fence, I know I was, like initially when they had the server issues, I was like, oh, wait till they sort it out. And I was, you know, at the point when we were doing this gaming weekend, I was just looking for an excuse to pick it up. So they were like, yeah, we want to have four PS5s. I'm like, sold. I will set this up. And it does have crossplay with the PC. It wasn't working that weekend, but I have played it since, and I have friends that are playing on PC as well. And you just exchange a little friend code, and you're good to go. And crossplay works fairly well. I was playing on my PlayStation and had three players playing on their PC of varying, you know, quality of builds, and yeah, it worked really well. Once we figured out who should be hosting, I think I was trying to make the PlayStation do too much. It was hosting. I was trying to stream, and it kept crashing.
Yeah.
So, but once we sorted that out, it was fine, seamless, and so I'm really happy that they launched this on PC to get more players in. I really feel like that was a big reason for this sort of taking off, because if it was exclusive to the PS5, requiring PS Plus, being a $50 title, like, I think you start to limit, you know, your player base. But the fact that it's on PC, available on Steam, supports crossplay, like, it doesn't limit, you know, the experience in that way. There is no cross progression. I don't know if they're working on it, but the crossplay works really well.
That's awesome. Well, you have to update us if they do add more things in the future. If you keep playing this game, you'll have to let us know how it's going.
Yeah, I will, for sure. Like, I will jump back in here and there. If you're playing Helldivers in the Discord, let us know. We'll schedule some more game nights, and we'll kill some bugs.
And speaking of the Discord, if you'd like to join our community over there, you can go to bit.ly/TGI Discord. And if you'd like to support Ryan and I and what we're doing here, head on over to patreon.com/thegamersin, just like Dominic, Elsie, and Tweep have done. Thank you guys so much for supporting us. That brings us to the news this week. We've got a couple of things coming out of Marvel. So first of all, we've got a release of a trailer for Marvel 1943, The Rise of Hydra. This is the Captain America and Black Panther game that they've been teasing for a while now. We have a name and also the first look trailer, and it looks amazing. We're not 100% sure. Like, to me, it looks like a cinematic trailer. There's no like UI, there's no real like gameplay, but they do say it was all generated in engine. But it looks fantastic. Like, the faces and the animation is just like next level. It looks almost live action. Like, it's so close. The tech is getting so good.
Yeah, no, it is. I think, like, so this is weird. Like, they revealed this trailer. We were talking about a pre-show. It's like, I didn't realize there was a full trailer, because it was part of this Unreal event, and there were snippets sort of tossed out there on social media, and the main one being sort of the clash between Captain America and Black Panther. I didn't realize that they were going to have sort of this antagonistic sort of
get out of my way relationship.
Yeah, like, they're very much like, you know, I think one of the lines in the trailer is like, you know, there are three super soldiers, including you. And it's like, well, that's too many, you know. It's like, okay. Like, we can all fight the Nazis, guys. It's fine.
Right?
You know?
Get in line.
Yeah, like, let's work together. And I'm sure, like, that's what will happen. And it's, technically, the game is billed as, like, there are four playable characters, mm-hmm. including Captain America and Black Panther, and they will all have sort of differing gameplay styles.
There's Black Panther and Captain America. Then there's someone who I think is in, like, Captain America's, like, squad. It's not Bucky, but it's somebody from that group, I think. And then there's this, like, kind of spy character, I think.
There's a who's Wakandan on, like, spy.
Black Panther's, the Wakandan spy, yeah, on Black Panther's side, yeah.
Yeah, and then it is a U.S. soldier and member of the Howling Commandos, which I believe was the crew that was in the original Captain America film. So, mm-hmm. But yeah, like, if you watch this sort of story trailer, I think the best sort of like look at how crazy we're getting with the look and feel of these video games is if you're a fan of The Walking Dead and you know King Ezekiel, the
love actor, him.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the guy's name. I think it's something Peyton. I should have looked that up ahead of time. But if you look at the screenshot that they have in the article that we'll link in the notes, it is that dude's face, and it's just it is spot on. Like it looks photorealistic. You know, mm-hmm. It is crazy. And when I saw that, I was like, holy crap. Like, we're at this level. Like, how is my PlayStation even going to run this thing? That was my first question. It's like, I don't even know how this is going to work. But, I'm curious to see what the gameplay is, though. Like, that's the one thing.
Yeah, that's the big question, right? Like, do you get to play? I mean, I imagine you have to play as each of the four characters at some point, right? Because they, at least from the trailer, it doesn't look like it's not a squad game, right? Like, it's very story driven and each character has their own role to play and their own powers and stuff. There's at points, like you say, it's an antagonistic relationship between Captain America and Black Panther, at least at the beginning, which means you're going to be like fighting against each other. So like, yeah, it's, you must go through like chapters and levels as each of the different characters. Like, I don't think that you play them together at the same time.
Yeah.
That'd be my guess anyway.
Yeah. It's hard to say. Like, we don't know. Like, we know there are four central characters you'll be able to play as them throughout the campaign. I imagine there, as you said, there will be Captain America levels, which will be focused, you know, on throwing your shield around. And we do see a sense of that in the story trailer. Like, you get that feel. Black Panther and the Wakandan spy might be more like stealth based, with the Black Panther stuff maybe being closer to like what we would expect from like a Batman game, you know, where you're sort of hiding above the enemy's line of sight and then sort of like jumping down and taking them out and stuff. And maybe the Howling Commando is more of like a straight up, you know, run and gun sort of gameplay.
I was gonna say, I expect him to have a gun.
Yes, he will have a gun. He will shoot it. And yeah, like the story trailer is very much setting up this like this clash between the two, and that makes sense, you know, just from the aspect of the fact that you have Captain America's shield made from vibranium, technically a stolen sort of, you know, element. It is Wakandan sort of technology. So like they play into that aspect in the trailer, and yeah, like I very much love this like this AAA approach to Marvel games, like Spider-Man, like Wolverine, that we will likely see down the road from Insomniac. Like, I am very much in for these high level licensed games with characters that we know and love. And you know, it,
yeah. And this is my personal favorite, Captain America is I love this like World War Captain America stuff. Like, his, yes, basically his origin story. I really like before he gets stuck in the ice and wakes up in the 2000 and whatever. Yeah, I really like the OG original origin Captain America stuff, and the fact that they're mixing it in with Black Panther is really, really cool and interesting. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah. What I think we're both looking forward to probably a little bit less is Marvel Rivals. So it's a free-to-play PvP shooter, so very similar to Overwatch from NetEase, which up until last year and then again very recently is Blizzard's partner in China. But this is like one thing I will say about this and Marvel Snap as well is I like that they, however they've done the licensing, they have access to all of the Marvel characters, and in particular X-Men. So you've got X-Men characters mixed in with like everyone we know from the MCU. So I really enjoy the full expanded Marvel universe, and not just like these smaller things that we're getting because of all the crazy licensing, broken apart Marvel stuff. So that is one thing I think is in the plus column to Marvel Rivals, but it looks a little cheap.
Yeah, I was struggling to explain that feeling I had while I was watching this trailer of like, there's just something to it, this feeling that I have that as I'm watching this, it's like, this is not the same experience as like, and I'll say it, like same experience as like Overwatch and Overwatch 2. Like it has that sort of high level approach, that AAA approach, you know, Marvel 1943 certainly has that feel as well. And you kind of nailed it with that word. Like it does feel sort of, and it's not fair. Like we've only seen the trailer. We haven't played the game. So like with that caveat, it does, but yeah, cheap seems like it's tough to say, but like, yeah, it does feel like there's something there that's kind of missing. And, but yeah, this is still alpha, like, but I don't see the game sort of, escaping that feel, because it is this free-to-play experience, and I know NetEase is known for like their mobile experiences, and this feels like and they've said as much, this is like an expanded approach from the mobile sort of games they're used to building, and this is going to be like a PC console sort of target. So but yeah, there's just something about it. You watch the trailer, and like I was explaining this to you earlier, it's like when you're watching the trailer, like they even sort of copy the way you damage characters, like that feel and that visual representation of damaging characters, where you see like sort of the red marks appear as you deal damage to a character. Like a lot about this feels very, very Overwatch, to a point where it's like, man, if these weren't Marvel characters, you could kind of see like maybe this story belongs in our layoffs and lawsuits section, you know, like I think because it is Marvel characters and a lot of the powers are like very much pulled from, you know, although I'm looking at a screenshot and I see Hulk like shooting a ray of radiation. Like I didn't know he was capable of doing that.
Maybe they just haven't gotten to that point in the MCU yet.
Yeah. Like I will fully admit, like, my knowledge of Marvel is very limited outside of the MCU. And
oh, same.
You know, I do love that they have characters in here that, you know, we are familiar with just based on, like, past movies, like the X-Men and other games that we played. Like, they have Magic in the game from, and she was very much present in Midnight Suns, the Marvel game that came before it.
Oh, okay. I was like, honestly, I don't know where she's from at all, other than just she's a card that I played all the time in Snap.
Yeah. And she is part of, I believe, the X-Men sort of stable of characters. But they are like including like some traditional, I don't know if did we see Captain America? I don't even think we saw Captain America.
I don't think so. There was Doctor Strange and Iron Man for sure, and Hulk, like you said. I think I saw Storm at some point. Yeah, I'm trying to think of who else was in there.
There's a Lady Galactus, like that's the big bad. Her name is Galacta. So I didn't know that was them. I don't know, is that a new character? I don't
no
know.
No idea.
I am vaguely familiar with Galactus. He eats planets.
Oh, Star-Lord. I did notice Star-Lord at some point in the trailer.
Yeah, they got the whole cast of the Guardians there with Groot, Star-Lord, Mantis. Oh, yeah, Groot Mantis.
And Rick. And one thing that looks really cool that is definitely not an Overwatch thing as far as I know is they seem to have, like, power-ups or, like, pair-ups that you could do. Like, there was some point where, like, if you have one person playing as Groot and one person playing as Rocket, then you can, like, team up and the Rocket jumps on Groot's shoulders, and that wasn't the only one. There was two or three that they showed as like these team up, like ultimate move sort of things. And I'm assuming that's if you have those two characters on the same team, which is a pretty cool concept. And it's like, it's the kind of thing where it's like, is it really cool or is that dictating the meta too much? Like, you know, it's thematically really interesting, but like you don't necessarily want to say like, okay, if we're gonna have a raccoon, we have to have a Groot, you know?
Yeah, no, yeah, that's, I mean, And maybe that's where their approach is like, okay, like let's do a lot of the teams, you know, like let's try to build in as many team ups as possible to sort of have that gameplay to it.
Yeah, just have to keep the variety.
Yeah, yeah. And I did, as you said, I like that pairing of like, well, if you have Groot and you have Rocket, the fact that you can have them sort of pair up and literally, you know, ride on the shoulders of Groot. I wonder what other pair ups they'll have in there. Like they do have some syncing abilities you can see where, as I was saying earlier, you have Hulk shooting a gamma ray at, I think that's, yeah, that's Iron Man. It kind of looked like Ironheart, but it is Iron Man. And doing some stuff there. I like one of my favorite parts about this is as someone who plays a lot of these Marvel games, I really do appreciate that Marvel Games has sort of approached to create their own universe where they are having
right,
established voice actors come in, like the same voice actor who does Spider-Man and Spider-Man 1 and 2 from Insomniac is also voicing or sounds like they're voicing Spider-Man in this one. Iron Man sounds like a similar voice actor to what we got in Midnight Suns. Doctor Strange looks like they're, I think it sounded a lot like Liam O'Brien, which is, I think, pulling from the animated universe as well. So they appear to be trying to create this like Marvel Games universe where they do have like a similar look, feel, and sound to these characters, which I do appreciate and is much easier to do with video games and, you know, with voice acting and stuff because, you know, you have these actors that are sort of known for their role and you're not having to go and pay Chris Evans millions of dollars to record voice lines for a free-to-play title. I like that there is that separation between like the Marvel games and Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, I don't think you need to have them sort of exist in the same sort of plane. Like, it's nice that they can have that separate realm, but I really do appreciate that they are sort of this feels like closer to their comic book counterparts, like with the Scarlet Witch and as you said, Storm and Magic and Hulk and stuff. So like, it looks interesting. I don't know if I will, like, it is free to play, but like, so was Overwatch 2 and I never booted that up. So like, I don't know. Like it's,
yeah. I mean, when it comes down to gameplay, it does look very Overwatchy. And so I probably won't give it too much time. I'm much more likely to play Rise of Hydra that we just talked about. Yes. But yeah, like I think for those people who do enjoy Marvel and Overwatch, congratulations. You now have Marvel Rivals, which seems very, very similar. So I think it's worth keeping an eye out and maybe seeing what the reception's like on launch. But we're still a while out from that. I think they're just allowing for beta signups or alpha signups maybe. So if you want to look into it, awesome. But I think I'm going to kind of wait and see when it comes out what the reaction is.
Yeah. No, I'll be doing the same. And I mean, it shouldn't really surprise folks at home. Like, free-to-play PvP shooters really isn't my jam.
Yeah, I think honestly, the only reason that we're even really talking about this is the fact that it's a Marvel game. That's 100% why. Like, otherwise, we don't really cover a whole lot of this stuff. But it is a Marvel license. So, it's getting airtime, but or like at least a little bit of our attention. We have some, I guess, sort of kind of good news out of Embracer. So we've been covering this Embracer story for a while now as they slowly crawl towards bankruptcy, but they are offloading Gearbox to Take-Two. So this is the studio behind Borderlands has been acquired now by Take-Two. Thoughts, feelings?
I mean, this is something that's been rumored for quite a while, and Take-Two, it makes sense as a company that would buy the Borderlands studio because Take-Two was their publisher on, I think, most, if not all of the Borderlands games. So they already have that relationship and the fact that, and this is the other thing, like Embracer bought them for $300 million and Take-Two's buying them for $460 million. So like, it is one of those things where Embracer's getting more money than they paid initially for the product or the,
yeah. And they bought them in 2021 too. So it wasn't even that long ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, inflation's a thing, but not that big a thing, not that quickly.
Yeah. And so it makes sense as a purchase. Like, it's a smart, I think it's a smart purchase. And now they can own sort of a franchise and a studio that's been very closely associated with them for a while. There are layoffs, unfortunately, associated with this purchase. So, like, Gearbox is laying off staff, which is, I don't know why they ended up doing it, but they did say they were laying off staff. But they also confirmed that Borderlands 4 is in active development, which, you know, makes sense. It's their most popular franchise. And to say, yeah, like, hey, what are you working on? It's like, well, of course it's Borderlands 4. I'm sure that's exactly why Take-Two bought them, because Gearbox is known for a few other franchises, but I think their most popular is definitely Borderlands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, I can't... Embracer is such a wild story in general, because each week there's something new to say. And I think one, yeah, we didn't put in the notes, but the studio or the CEO of Embracer was doing like a shareholder meeting. And one of the questions, the stupidest thing you'd ever see, one of the questions is like, hey, when are you going to start buying more studios? And I don't know if the CEO had to like bite his tongue or something just so he wouldn't say like, are you freaking kidding me? But like, he said like, well, it's too early to say like when we'll start acquiring more studios, but at this stage we're still within, I think they have stated that as of the sale of Gearbox, they have exited sort of the, oh god, we lost a $2 billion contract and we need to sell off a bunch of stuff. So I think they have said that they are done with the restructuring.
They wanted to get their debt down to $750 million or something is the number that's kind of stuck in my head, something around there.
Yeah.
Right? From that $2 billion down to under $1 billion, which is, yeah, still a wild amount of money.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, like, and each week we've talked about what, you know, what they've sold and what they've gotten rid of, and you know, I think Saber leaving last week was like 40 projects that came with it. So like, there's a lot of projects that are leaving the Embracer sort of group, but mm-hmm. they also still have a lot of games still in active development within that group still. So, you know, Embracer's going to be fine. They're going to keep building games, but there are a lot of high profile studios, including Gearbox, that have sort of escaped this, you know, Embracer fate, you know, and I think this is a good home for Gearbox. I think that they are in the right spot now, a spot that makes a lot more sense. I think when Embracer bought Gearbox and a lot of other studios, it really felt like a literal cash grab of like, well, here, we'll give you $300 million. Now we own Borderlands, and now we own this, and now we own that. It's like, you're just building this portfolio to either make a bunch of money or, in this case, crash and burn. You know, it's mm-hmm. It's a wild one. So I hope we see less news out of Embracer and they can just focus on building great games, releasing great games, and, you know, get away from this like profit driven madness. We know that'll still be in the background, but, you know,
yeah,
it's tough.
Well, speaking of profit-driven madness, we are going to get ads on Discord now.
Yay!
Yay. I mean, like, very recently, even Discord had said that they were not going to do ads, but now they have changed their mind. It's coming soon, too. It's in the next week or so, we should start to see ads. And basically, like, as far as I understand, it sounds like if I were to, like, be in a Discord server streaming a game, then there would be ads in my video, if I understand correctly. And, like, I don't know, do a lot of people do that? Like, every once in a while when I'm playing DBD, if we have like another friend jump in so that we have a full party of four, but like we're in a game and they haven't been able to join yet, like we'll throw the video on so they can watch the game until they're able to join the lobby. But like, I don't sit in Discord and do like a 5-hour Hearthstone stream or something. Like, that's what I do on Twitch. So are they trying to, like, how are there enough people streaming that they think they can make money this way? Like, do people use Discord like a Twitch substitute?
I think they use Discord more as like a stage thing where you are presenting a game to a very small audience, depending on the size of your Discord, you know.
I don't know. It seems odd to me.
Yeah. I mean, Discord has, so I was trying to find more information on this, and like, this was a news story that broke April Fool's Day. It is not an April Fool's Day joke. When they say ads, like, I know my brain immediately went to where you're thinking is like, where are they going to put them? Like, are they going to, you know, insert them into our messages, like between our messages? Is it going to be like a banner ad that you can get rid of by subscribing to Nitro? And I think that's where everyone's brain goes. But when you dig in a little deeper, and there's been a blog post up on Discord for the last month about their approach to sponsored quests. And that is sort of what the Wall Street Journal is reporting on, is that there's these sponsored quests. And essentially what it is there are, I guess these are already in Discord. They'll sort of exist within sort of the... You know, if you're in your Discord DMs, like you see your friends, Nitro shop, mm-hmm. and then all your direct messages, there'll be an additional sort of tab called quests. And these are sponsored by game developers. So, for example, like, let's say one of the quests is for Fortnite, you know, and one of the quests will be like, hey, you got to stream Fortnite to your friends to unlock this special digital item. And we all know Discord has like the shop with all the digital items. And I think if you go into the shop now, there's like a whole Valorant section. So to Discord's credit, like, it is a free service we all use. I don't want to see ads sort of like splintered through our messages. Like, that is definitely what we don't want to see. I don't want to see mm-hmm. video ads either. But like, this idea of them basically creating like an ads section, which is your ability to get like Twitch drops, like that would be the equivalent to it, to the closest thing to describe it is like, there is a Discord blog post about how they want to implement quests, and it sounds very similar to how Twitch does Twitch drops, in that you're earning digital items, whether it's for Discord itself, like your profile animations and stuff like that, or you're earning sort of in-game items by engaging through Discord with various games. So it's not, I don't think it's, you know, the doom and gloom that we're worried about. Like, could we get to the point where they introduce more ads and they try to sell more Nitro? Like, maybe. Mm-hmm. But like, it looks like they are, like, because they have to monetize it somehow, right? Like, and I would prefer them to do these sponsored quests over, say, you know, training AI with our messages or whatever, or inserting ads.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't know.
Who knows if they're actually selling? Like, I don't want to say they're not, because I honestly don't know. I just, like, it's one of those things where I just kind of assume I use Discord the same way I use like Facebook and Twitter. I just assume everything is public.
Yes, like, of course. Like, yeah. you have to approach it that way. And you know, Discord has a privacy policy. I'm sure if you were to review it, it would say like, we don't sell your data. We don't sell, you know, we only scan your messages to ensure that it is a safe, you know, place for everyone. But you have to approach this day and age, like with every service of like, if you're putting something out there, it's just best.
I just assume if I use it for free, it's making money product. Off me somehow. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but like that all being said, like, even if it's free, you're the product, like, we still want it to be a good product. And I think if they took a traditional approach to ads, it would make Discord no longer a good product. But I think this idea of like, let's try these sponsored quests, do some drops. Like, Discord is, I think the reason Discord is so popular is like, not only is it a great tool that we love to use, it's not just for video gamers, but it's also something that's been sort of, loved by developers, and it's used to develop whole games, like in terms of community management. And it's even like implemented into the platforms now with the PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X. So it is a tool that is beloved by the entire community of, you know, the video game industry. So to that regard, like, I think they have like a really good setup here where these sponsored quests could really provide some extra monetization that isn't intrusive to us as the players. Now, that being said, you know, before we started recording, I jumped into the shop. I've never been in there before. There's no pop-ups. There's no like, you know, hey, new in the shop, you can get Valorant ads. There's like a little badge that says there's something new in the shop, but it's not like intrusive. So as long as it continues to be this.
As long as it stays out of your way.
Exactly. It stays out of our way. It's look, it's there.
But like, honestly, like staying out of your way is not what companies partnering with Discord want to hear, you know? Sure. Like, if I'm paying you money to advertise my shit and then your users are like, oh good, it's totally out of my way and I never need to see it, why am I spending money on your platform? You know? So I think there's a fine line there between like ruining your product but also making money through putting other people's products in your users' faces. Like, I don't know how you walk that line and make money. So that's a question Discord, I think, is going to answer, because I'm with you. Like, I don't want to see, like, I go to Discord, I want to see my servers, I want to see my friends. I don't want to see shit for games I don't play. Like, keep it away from me. But if you're keeping it away from me, how are you ever going to make money? How are you going to entice people who don't already play whatever the game is, like you talked about Valorant? Like, if I don't play it, which I don't, and you're trying to get new users, like, I mean, how do you do that without being in my specific face, my non-Valorant playing face?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is there, but I mean, if the ads in the shop and everything, because I didn't even realize there was a Discord shop. So this is what I mean. Like, it's not intrusive right now, which is good. But I think, like, in order to get companies to give you money to advertise on your platform, you're going to have to put it in your users' faces. So I don't know. Obviously, we'll wait and see, but I'm this doesn't sound like a good thing for Discord.
Yeah. I mean, it's a step we knew would happen eventually.
Yeah. I mean, obviously they're not sending it, or they're not selling enough Nitro, right? Like, not enough people are paying for their service. So,
yeah. And they did say, like, that's what Nitro was put in place for. It was like, hey.
Yeah. Somebody's got to pay. Yeah.
Exactly. We need enough people to pay. And, you know, it's not just, it can't just be venture capitalists keeping us afloat. I'm sure they get some money from Xbox and PlayStation to sort of integrate their services. But, and they did get a bunch of cash, I think, from PlayStation. There was that huge sort of investment they made. So, you know, they've got relationships, they've got money coming in, and I think this can be done smartly. You know, I know a lot of folks are probably thinking, like, oh, poor Ryan, so naive, like, this is the beginning of the end. And like, I hope that's not the case, because like, Discord is my social media platform. Like, I am on Twitter, I try not to go on Facebook, but like, Discord is always open, and it is notifications are turned on, you know. Like, I don't limit it, especially the gamers in Discord. I don't limit it in terms of like what pops into on the phone. So like, I'd love to keep it that way. And Discord has been very, you know, respectful with notifications. I don't get notifications that aren't, you know, gamers in or stuff I've set up. You know, it's not like, hey, new in the shop is Valorant stuff. It's like, you know, there's a little icon. Occasionally the Nitro thing will have like a more of a flourish to it, but it doesn't get in the way. So if they can keep that balance, I'm happy. But I know people will share their thoughts if it starts to escape that balance, you know. Like, I think Discord knows that too, but I've been fooled before by, you know, management saying like, we hear you and we understand at Discord, blah, blah. Like, you can already see the JPEG apologies in your mind, you know? So hopefully it doesn't get to that.
Yeah. Well, we shall see. But that's going to do it for us tonight, guys. Thank you so much for sticking with us and listening. If you'd like to visit us on the web, you can go to gamersinpodcast.com. Otherwise, you can follow us over on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at JossPlays. Ryan is at R. Murphy. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. Thanks for staying at The Gamers Inn. Remember, tune in next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.